There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 994, May 29th, 2023, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say Max Factor paints it pretty in the Principality. Man from Tennessee wins at Indy. Karma comes to Aston Martin. Rising sun in Enstone may lead to sunset in Oviedo. We shall explain very gladly. Back to you, sir.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Max continues his full domination. Fernando's second place is the oldest in Monaco since Jack Brabham's second place in 1970, and he was 44 on that day. It just never ends at Ferrari, does it? Alpine looking feisty in Monaco, and Newgarden wins that crazy Indy 500. And this week's interviews: IndyCar drivers Kalem Ilott and Agustin Canapino. Also, I need to do my spiel. We need your contributions, your help. A dollar here, a dollar there, to keep this program up on the servers. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. We really, really appreciate it. Nas, welcome to the studio. What a weekend. I mean, we're talking Indy 500, Monaco, Coca-Cola 600. This is God's gift to man.
That is very true. And what an excellent weekend we had. A mighty fine display of performance between drivers from the same team. And Mr. Rogers, as we have seen in the past, and as we will see it this year more and in the future, when the heat is on and the chips are down, cream rises to the top, and sour cream goes down the grid and the drain with a giant sucking sound. On this side of the pond, there were three red flags, which led to a one-lap mad dash to the checkered flag. Homegrown talent, Joseph Newgarden from Henderson, Tennessee, gave Roger Penske win number 19 at the Brickyard. And that was very exciting. The purse was like millions and millions of dollars, and he himself is going to get like $3.6 million. And you were earlier talking about a total purse was just over $17 million. And how much did the second place guy got?
$1.043 million. Chump change for an afternoon's drive.
Yes, sir. And let me just tell you, in 1973, October, when Ronnie Peterson won the U.S. Grand Prix at Watkins Glen, I remember in a magazine seeing a picture of him on the podium, the wreath that they had and all that. And the caption said, "Sweden's Ronnie Peterson wins the biggest purse offered in Formula One by winning the U.S. Grand Prix at Watkins Glen and getting a check for $50,000. And today we have $1 million for finishing second in the Indy 500. You know, the guy who was Rookie of the Year, Benjamin Peterson from Seattle / Copenhagen, he got like $250,000.
Yeah, Catherine Legg is even going to get a check.
That's good. You know, what was interesting, I remember when Domino's Pizza had a car, you know, they were sponsoring Alan Sir Jr. and they were famous for their pizza in 30 minutes or free. What they used to do is they would give $30,000 prize to the guy who qualified 30,000 to the guy who was leading on lap 30, and $30,000 to the guy who would finish 30th, which is like they only have 33 cars. So it's a great American, it's not a race, you know, it's in a big American institution. And this was, I think, very, very well attended. And I hope their TV ratings are also pretty good. And the finish was incredible. I think what is happening, and credit goes to NASCAR for doing these red flag finish, but they go in overtime, which 200 laps become 205 laps, which I'm not interested in. But I think this is going to become a motor racing standard that the fans will be allowed to see checker in green condition, which is not a bad idea as long as the rules we know and not change as per whims and wishes of the race director. Wonder if that has ever happened, but that's another story. So, would you like to give a snapshot of the race briefly, and then we can do our quickie on Colli?
Are we talking about Monaco or the Indy 500?
Monaco, sir. We are here for Formula One. Everything else is extra shrimp on the Barbie.
So exciting. The weather, it was beautiful. You could smell La France just next door. It was glorious. You know, Leclerc, the star, the Monégasque is there at home. Everybody wants him to win. I'm telling you, in the atmosphere, and then Fernando, so pumped up. And for me, I have to admit, because once again, the race was very processional. If we had no rain, I mean, it would have been even worse. But for me, the excitement was qualifying. I mean, I thought qualifying was ripping. I mean, it was exciting, especially the last few minutes. I mean, if you didn't think that was exciting, you better go back to Martinsville.
Yes, and Mercedes in Monaco brought their long-awaited new concept. The zero-side barn has finally been put to Elliott's Nest. It was a nice try, like Honda's Earth car, but new ground had to be broken, as it was nothing but a complete Berezina or a total disaster. One win since the beginning of the 2022 season is not what Toto wants to sing about. In Colli 1, Red Bull on top and Red Bull at the bottom. Do we need any explanation except to say Checo went into the wall of voodoo? So I knew right then and then that his goose was cooked. And I'm going to tell you something. If Max starts a race from the back, whether it's at high-speed Silverstone or Singapore, he's going to get on the podium, normal course of business. But if there's a full course caution and they bunch up, then watch out for this guy. Now, both Haas cars and Logan Sargeant out in Q1. Big surprise was Sporty Mouth, Sonoda third. Meaning, Yuki, you are faster than Fernando. And how often can we hear that? Q2, numero uno, we know who. Lando Norris played I Fought the Wall and the Wall won. He still made it to Q3. Lance Stroll continued his trend of never reaching Q3 in Monte Carlo, but his teammate was third fastest. Who could that be, Mr. Rogers?
Unbelievable. I hate to say this, but Mr. Lawrence Stroll has got to be thinking, what if Fernando had a really good teammate that can contribute? Because, you know, Lance, I mean, he's a nice guy. I mean, he's a great driver, don't get me wrong, but he's not, you know, in that class of super machismo. So, yeah, I saw a lot of wasted points there for the team. Not that they need more money or anything.
Yeah, and the guy's almost twice his age.
He could be his papa.
Yeah, and somebody on another podcast said it's about time Lawrence Stroll makes a business executive decision and fire his son. I know it's something, so many years ago it happened in ice hockey. One of the in the U.S. ice hockey arena. One of the coaches fired his own son for lack of performance. Okay, Q3. Spellbinding is how Martin Brundle described Max's last gasp effort to grab his first pole position in the Principality, taking his total of pole positions to 23, one more than the hombre he beat, our favorite El Machismo. According to ItaliaRacing.net, qualifying was Verstappen spectacular, Alonso magical. Hard to disagree. You know what was so impressive about Max's pole position? There were three sectors. He was down like 0.3.
I know. I thought that Jesus was coming through the clouds. I saw Fernando on the top. I could not believe that this guy found 0.2 in the final sector. I mean, for me, that's where Martin Brundle, he just couldn't believe it and thought it was sublime. I mean, I have to admit, when Max needs to get it done, he doesn't Leclerc it. And that's my new term of the week. If you Leclerc it, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, of course. Well, that's, you know, that's it's these moments that define a great driver from a very good driver. When you have a driver qualifying 1.5 seconds faster than the supposedly greatest driver of the era, I mean, you know, you got something special on hand. So this was, I remember these, after those two sectors, the commentators were saying that he's not going to make up that much time.
Exactly. And I was convinced right there. I thought Fernando was on pole for Monaco of all places. I began to chill the champagne. The caviar was going in the freezer. I was prepared for the big celebration. And then Max, I just couldn't believe it.
Yeah, unbelievable. Yeah, this guy is special. Charles Leclerc was going for 3 in a row on home soil, but had to settle for 3rd on the grid. Then came the law for impeding Lando. Esteban Ocon on 2nd row for Alpine. Very, very impressive. Row 3 was Sainz Jr. and Lewis. LCH was only 0.24 seconds slower than Max. Hopefully the zero sight part will not be seen again. But this is a street circuit. Let's see how it works at high-speed tracks. So do you think we will see some mini magic from Mercedes in Barcelona?
It's possible.
Okay, now, as far as the race is concerned, I think the whole world, except for people in the Netherlands, were wishing and hoping for a Nando victory, which would have been very good for him, also for Formula One, and of course, Le Host. I may sound like LL Cool J, but I have to say, Max did not fizzle in the drizzle.
Bo shizzle.
Yeah, maybe this year I will get into the Miami paddock.
There's no doubt, dude. You change your address. I got it, my brother.
Yeah. Okay, he kept us cool and made a big impression on his teammate by lapping him not once but 2 times in the race. I think this has sealed the fate of Checo's dream, the impossible dream. And after winning 3 championships in a row, I can see Max and Kelly Piquet sailing off to South Pacific for some enchanted evening. And did you have any doubt? Let me ask you a question. Some people think that had Alonso taken pole or changed to intermediate when he came in first time in the pit, that he would have won the race. Are you buying that seriously?
No, the clock and the numbers simply state, not only that, but the fact that Fernando had time to go back and get the intermediates shows you right there, and come out still in second shows you that there was just no way that getting him the first time was going to help him out. Hey, what was great is how well Aston Martin managed that quick mistake, and boom, 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 it was rectified. I was very impressed. No complaints from me. And I have to admit, Max, you know, I'm sure Fernando was hoping for some kind of mistake from that young man, but there were a few, but he managed them. And when the rain came, everybody were making mistakes, but it was an unbelievable performance for sure.
Yeah, that GP2 engine is not breaking down.
Exactly. We're not getting the DNFs. So yeah, it's going to be amazing. And what's really exciting, we've got the super momentum. We got Fernando always on the podium, and we're going to España. where everybody loves El Machismo.
You know, that engine used to break down before a formation lap or before a warm-up lap could be completed. I mean, they've come a long way, so good for them. But, you know, as far as Max is concerned, there is no stopping the Dutch freight train. Supremely talented in performance and delivery, both in collie form and race trim. A lot is being said on the internet chatter that had Alonso changed to intermediates, he would have won the race. Yes, it's a possibility, but I have to agree with you for once that Max had them all covered. He is on a hot roll, and a bully that he is, he will find a way to create enough space for a pass, even in the confines of streets of Monte Carlo or Singapore. He was quick in the dry. In the last 20 laps, he tiptoed through the tulips and raindrops to keep the Bond wagon behind. You know what is interesting? Max's worst finish this year is second. His four wins from six races has put him sixth on the all-time list with 39 Grand Prix wins, only two behind Ayrton Senna. And that is seven more than Machismo, who must be wondering what Diana Ross says in a song, "Tell me where the road turns." And Max will still be 25 after the Italian Grand Prix in September. And there are only two words left for Mercedes Formula One team and their number one in wins at this time. Andale, andale. So I think he needs to win as many as he can, and he will, before, you know, 2026 season starts. I find it very hard that a winning engine supplier will walk away and the new one will just continue where the other one left. I've never seen that happen. There are always growing pains, and so we'll see how that works out. And second, Machismo, Fernando Alonso, oh so close, but no Havana cigar.
I'm happy. I think we didn't have the chance. Obviously, Max was quicker than us right from the beginning until the end. So, you know, we have to accept that. And second was the best place for us today. And the race was not easy to execute, especially when the rain hit us. We were considering if stopping for inters or for dry tires. We did double stop there, so it was a little bit confusing. But yeah, luckily we didn't lose any position. But it was not an easy afternoon.
His best chance of winning a race in a decade was jumping Max at the start. And to be honest with you, believe it or not, I was really hoping for that, just to see Machismo win a race and doing what he did to Lewis in Hungary a few years ago. But Nando found out what Checo already knows. Beating Max is very, very hard, if not impossible. But somebody did that in the last four races of 2021. Who could that be? They say slippery when wet, so I was very surprised when he took on mediums on. But Machismo has a good explanation for it. He said, and I quote, "For me, it was very clear that the track on the lap we stopped was completely dry, apart from turn 7 and 8. It was completely dry for 99% of the track, so I stopped for dry tires." End quote. This is his fifth Monaco podium. Amazingly, the last one was in 2012. And like you said, at 41, he's the oldest driver to finish on the Monaco podium since Jack Brabham in 1970. And his fifth podium of the season from six races moves him to just 12 points behind Perez in the driver standings. Let me just tell you something. Do you remember when Jacques Villeneuve won the championship, his teammate Heinz Hermannsen had a very poor season?
Of course, one of my favorite seasons.
And then in the case of both Lewis and Sebastian Vettel, they won championships by winning a lot of races and respective teammates went winless. If Checo finishes behind Alonso this season, I think he'll be chop-chop at Red Bull. Because that's very, very bad not to finish ahead of Aston Martin. What say you?
It's possible. It's possible. We have a lot more races to go, and we'll see what happens. But, yeah, I mean, that's why they have Daniel Ricciardo. Let's not forget, they're smarter than we are, really.
Oh, no kidding. And, of course, they have Liam Lawson leading the Super Formula. Let's see what they do with him. Okay, third in the race, Esteban Ocon. French flavor is all around Monaco. After a very good qualifying effort to start from second row, this is a very well-deserved podium. Badly needed by both the team and the driver, and this is first French podium in Monaco since one-hit wonder Olivier Panis in 1996. This really surprised me because a lot of French drivers like, Panis and Patrick Depailler, Jean-Pierre Beltoise, they all got their first win in Monaco. On lap 11 of 78, Esteban survived a body slam by Sainz Jr., and at the end of the day, Mr. Esteban was feeling like a race winner, extremely happy, and so was Mr. Otmar Szafnauer from Detroit. Fourth, LCH. Finally, the zero sideboards are history, but so is number 8 for this season. Did you read there that Lewis was at an NBA game and he was introduced as 8-time world champion?
I didn't know about the introduction, but I knew he went to see the Lakers.
Yeah, so good for him. LCH got one extra point for setting the fastest lap of the race. Does this mean future is so bright I need some shades? Let's see what happens in Spain, and we will have an idea what's going on. His teammate was fifth, George Russell. You know, this was interesting. We all know he has speedy bones, but I did not know he had a funny bone also. Asking the team to let him pass LCH so he does not fall behind Leclerc due to his 5-second penalty, I think that was funny. That penalty was for doing a tango with Checo. He was upset skidding into the escape road at Mirabeau, which cost him a possible podium, and he was mouthing off, so Toto Wolff even came on the team radio to calm down Boy George. Sixth, our local boy, who can walk to the track from his apartment, Charles Leclerc. Misery loves company. Charles and his teammate Carlito did not have a good weekend. After 6 races, the Monaco resident and racer has only 1 top 5 finish from Baku. This is a guy who was fighting for the championship last year. Misery also runs in the family. His brother Arthur, who races in Formula 2, had a similar challenging weekend. Normally, drivers do well on their home track, but so far this has not worked out for Charles and his brother. Seventh, another French flavor, Monsieur Pierre Gasly, both Alpine in the points with one on the podium in French-speaking territory, should be a sweet Edith Piaf song for Monsieur Laurent Rossi. And I just hope, you know, I like continuity, so I would like to see Otmar Szafnauer keep his job for the season. And who knows if there was a strange race like a Monza 88 or a Barcelona 2016. Maybe Pierre Gasly or Esteban Ocon get another win. Time will tell. Now we come to number 8, guy who finished 8, Desperado. Sainz Jr., he was not a happy camper in Monaco. His comments on the team radio showed his frustration, especially the way he said, "I don't care about Hamilton." Australia was the only race he did not score any points. He is 6th in the championship with 48 points, 6 ahead of Leclerc. I have a feeling his days at Ferrari are numbered and looks like he may have already decided where he's going. What say you on his future at Scuderia Ferrari?
Super frustrating. Nobody's on the same page at Ferrari. Everybody's always going, you know, why are you saying this? What are you doing? It's terrible. They should really, I don't know, it's almost like a lack of communication. But yeah, the frustration was brutal. The problem is Ferrari continues to be so Ferrari-like. I mean, I haven't seen much change from Monsieur Vasseur, but and that takes time. I understand that. But it's brutal for Leclerc and Sainz Jr. And of course, Sainz, he's slated to go to Audi. They've got other guys. The problem is Ferrari has bigger problems than drivers. They've got a system that doesn't really work and they need to revamp the system.
You know, they say negative and negative is plus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is the perfect time to bring Nando back.
It's time. Because Nando will show him how it's done, when it's done, and he loves pasta. So, I don't know. Nando is unbelievable. All I have to say is Nando is the story of the year. This podium thing, this machismo thing at 42 is I know it's blowing LCH's mind. It's blowing everybody's mind on the grid. And that's why he's getting so many accolades. They're going, how does he do it?
Yeah, you know, especially if you take into account his teammate who's very young and on paper, not in paper, but in reality, he was Formula 3 champion and his daddy's little Jim Clark. And for him to just be no competition, no threat to Alonso, that says a lot about this guy. I mean, it will be a shame if Alonso does not get a win this year. I don't care how it comes, but the world of Formula 1, I think, will be very, very excited if he gets a win this year.
Yes, and I don't know if you noticed it, but when Lance crashed, and he crashed like 3 or 4 times, but you could tell in his voice when he was on the radio that he's down. He knows that he's being completely outclassed. And he must have known when he found out Fernando Alonso is going to be your teammate, by the way, Lance. I hope you dig it. I'm telling you, it's tough out there.
Yeah, but you know, when you have a driver or any person in a situation, and I see that in a junior formula, you know, with drivers whose daddies are, you know, filthy rich, very deep pocket, you know, they don't care. I mean, if they make it, fine. If they don't, I mean, I've even made some comments about certain drivers that if they give up racing, they will have more money available through their trust fund than they will through success in racing. So when you have a situation like that, I mean, what will motivate Lance Stroll to try to beat Fernando Alonso? First, knowing it will be almost impossible, so why even try?
He's going to have a tough life now, sir.
He's going to have a tough life?
Yeah.
We'll see. Okay, 9th. Lando Norris, both McLarens were in the points. One thing I will say, they sure know how to paint their cars. That was very impressive. This was only his 3rd point-scoring finish of the season. There is more chatter about him than any other driver who has a reasonable chance of getting out of his current team to find greener and faster pastures. And, you know, his name has been linked to Red Bull also, and I don't know where he can go. There are not many race winning options available out there. What do you think where he will go, if he will go anywhere from McLaren at the end of the season?
Ferrari. They need young whippersnappers over there while they're restructuring their system.
You know who I think would be good is the guy coming next 10th, Oscar Piastri. He will not be winning any awards with the package he has. This was only his 2nd point scoring finish of the season. The first one was on home track in Melbourne. After the Battle of Bulge, he and Mark Webber fought with Alpine to go to McLaren. I think he will be a prisoner of his own device for a few seasons. I hate to see talent like this go to waste season after season. I was thinking, you know, maybe this will be a good driver at Scuderia Ferrari. What say you?
Well, his last name's Piastri. And if your last name ends with an I, you're in.
Yeah, that's very true. Would you like to see him leave McLaren at the end of the season? Well, this is his first season.
I don't think he's going to leave after this first season. Zach Brown will go on a eating binge or something. Let's not have that happen. But who knows? Who knows? Who knows? And you know, Zach Brown, I don't know if you saw his face when Palou wrecked.
You mean Pato O'Ward? That's his driver.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. On the lap number 5 or something on the restart.
Mm-hmm.
Shocking. I mean, I felt so bad for Zach Brown. I mean, he thought he might win the Indy 500, and it just all fell apart right there, and he shook his head.
Yeah, I saw that. Well, he really could have won the race because, you know, he was very quick. Thing is, he did what Takuma Sato did some years, tried to go underneath Dario Franchitti for the lead. And hit Franchitti, and Franchitti kept going, won the race, and Sato-san ended up in the wall. So, it's easy to say these things, but if you're going to pass, if you have a faster car at Indy, especially last few lap, do it the way, do it on the straight, you know, makes it easier. Remember when that guy, J.R. Hildebrand, crashed on the final corner of the final lap? It was the 100 Indy 500. he went on the outside, and God, man, even if he had slowed down by 5 seconds, he would have still won. But, you know, these things happen. But I really, I followed both the careers of Piastri and Lando Norris. I mean, these people have won anything and everything with authority. So I definitely would love to see them in a race-winning car. And we'll see where they can go. Kisser, for me, move of the race on lap 18 was when Kevin Magnussen passed Logan Sargeant. I think that was pretty impressive and machismo. What say you?
I don't know, dude. Passing Logan Sargeant? I don't know.
But in a Haas, keep that in mind.
I dig it. I dig it. But Logan Sargeant is... I'm disappointed in Logan Sargeant. But I'm disappointed with a lot of people, so... I don't know.
Okay. Okay, now we will look at some points to ponder from the Principality. Monaco Grand Prix, round 6 of the 2023 season, all won by Red Bull. Driver score is 4-2, and let's leave it at that. Now, Lewis Hamilton set the fastest lap on lap 33, 1 minute 15.65. Now, interestingly, the podium finishers were not in the top 5 in terms of their fastest lap. Esteban Ocon's best time, 1 minute 16.5, was 6th fastest of the race. Max had the 7th fastest time, 1:16.6. Machismo set the 9th fastest lap, 1:16.67. And you know, like Juan Manuel Fangio used to say, best way to win a race is to win at the slowest possible speed. And Jim Clark's philosophy was just the opposite. And of course, both these gents were very, very successful, so you cannot argue with them. Okay, it was 190th podium for a Honda engine. Now, Yuki Tsunoda, he had a lot of problem with this Brembo or Hitco, and of course, he was the usual, making. My nephew was watching the race, and he was texting me, and when he heard Yuki Tsunoda, he asked me, is he normally that upset? I said, oh, this is mild for him. But DC called him, he said, Yuki Tsunoda, part-time racing driver, full-time comedian. Do you feel any sympathy for Yuki at Monaco?
No, he's having a good time. I know he's frustrated. He yells at everybody, you want me crash? It's fun. I love it.
Yeah. Now, Gunther Steiner and Gene Haas also had a nice tune going on in Monte Carlo as they celebrated team's 150th Grand Prix start. Final analysis from me for the championship fight battle. There is no battle, just a Panzer division rolling easy-peasy into Polonia. Guernica next. What say you?
Well, I guess you're right. Yeah, it's blitzkrieg. It's fast, it's quick, and there's no mistakes or DNFs.
Yep.
Even with all the pictures of the Red Bull floor, that would cause a lot of engineers scurrying about, jumping to AutoCAD or whatever they use to see what they could come up with. Fascinating. The biggest problem is his name is Adrian Newey. He's a wizard. He's probably some kind of alien. Nobody knows. He's unbelievable. And when they saw that floor, some of the comments were just unbelievable. So, yes, Red Bull is so far ahead. They have Adrian Newey. And it's going to be catch-up time until, well, they have a better idea, Ford.
Yes. And the best comment was made by Toto Wolff. He was quoted as saying, the crane operator must work for Cirque du Soleil.
Very funny. Yes, Toto is funny. Well, he had to be funny because his floor was up in the air, and everybody didn't think that was very impressive. It looked like Hot Wheels. So, yes, I love this stuff. But, yes, Red Bull is going to dominate until 2026. And then it'll be Aston Martin, Fernando, and GP2 engine all over again, winning and winning and winning. And we'll be back in the saddle again.
Okay, sir, before we go to Motorsports Mondial, today we have double the pleasure. Shall we do an interview that we recorded at Indianapolis a couple of weeks ago?
Absolutely. This will give a little air to what happened at Indy.
Okay, sir, the first interview is with a young chap from Cambridge, England, Callum Aylott. Callum did a interesting thing. He went from karting to Formula 3, and I will let him tell our listeners whose idea this was. And very interesting chap, very friendly, and he is now racing with Honkos Hollinger Racing. and this was his second Indy 500. So I thank him for his time, and thanks to the lady from Hunkos Racing, Amira, for helping us arrange this, actually both the interviews. And I hope our listeners will enjoy this. Okay, folks, I'm here in Indianapolis with a happy chappy from jolly old England, Mr. Callum Aylard. Callum, how are you, and how is the weekend going so far?
I'm all right. We've had a bit of a tough weekend so far. Qualifying could have gone a bit better, but we've been changing lots of things, trying to put it in the right direction, and just not really had much luck. I think us and a couple of other teams just finding it quite difficult to work our way through, but it's like this sometimes.
I was speaking to your teammate from Argentina. He was very complimentary, saying that you're very helpful to him. How do you like working with him, and is it frustrating to help a rookie who does not know oval racing?
No, it's great. He took very well to the ovals. That was a surprise for me in Texas. He did really, really well there. And no, it's not at all. It's good. There's always a few things we can learn. I kind of, anyway, was following off of where I got to last year as a single car. So I had my things to focus on and that. And, you know, there's always a few things to learn. So he's doing well. As a team, we need to improve quite a bit. So we have the same mindset. And I'm happy. He's complimentary about me. He's a nice guy, and we work well together.
Now, I was here last year for the Indy 500. What is your game plan for this year's event? I won't say anything what happened last year.
Yeah, hopefully not like last year, but I kind of have a much better understanding than last year. I think as a team, we have a much better understanding. We have another car to test things on, and I think we'll be just in a much better starting point anyway. So yeah, it should be interesting. I think we had a struggle here at the open test last week or 2 weeks ago. We needed to make quite a few changes after that, but we're now on the other car, everything was all right, so it's just making sure we problem solve on that side.
In 2015, at the age of 16, you took the jump from karting to Formula 3. Was this the idea from the mind of Dr. Marco, and what was your thinking at this stage of your career?
Yeah, so the original plan was probably to do Formula Renault, and then I sat down with Dr. Helmut Marko in Silverstone GP, and that was his idea after Verstappen had gone and done the same jump, was to follow and see what I could do on that side. And yeah, I didn't really know what to expect, so I kind of got thrown in that side, and I did a good job, maybe not as good as some people expected, but at the same time I learned so much in that year that it helped me a lot later in my career anyway. So that was an interesting period. I don't really have any regrets about it. Big learning curve.
You have been in both the Red Bull and Ferrari driver programs. What are the similarities and differences between the two? I'm guessing the food is better in Italy.
Yeah, the food was better. I mean, after I left Red Bull, they joined with Honda, and they got some of the sushi, I think, from Honda. So that wasn't too bad. They're my two favorite foods anyway. But in terms of similarities and differences, again, they're all trying to achieve the same goals. You know, they want to get you prepared for Formula One. They want to put you in Formula One because it's a benefit to them. But in terms of the overall package, I felt Ferrari was more family work together between the other drivers to achieve a similar goal. And Red Bull was a bit more you work individually with people, and that has different effects for different people. I spent a lot longer at Ferrari, 4 years in total, and just 1 year at Red Bull. I think in a certain way I would have loved to have retried Red Bull at a later age, because I was quite young, quite very inexperienced, and not really able to lead myself in the same way I am today. But again, you learn and you build yourself off of those experiences. So I was grateful to Red Bull for giving me the opportunity and actually teaching me a lot of stuff in a very compact season. And then, yeah, developing myself even further in Ferrari. I keep getting buzzed, so.
Okay. Now, when a young driver is in these programs, do you have any choice in terms, let's say they say we want you to race in whatever series, do you have a choice of which team you want to go with, or everything is decided by them?
No, at that point it was all decided by Red Bull. With Ferrari it was a bit of a different story. I was kind of making the decisions kind of myself with their opinions and influence. In terms of the series is completely decided by them. You know, the plan immediately when I came with Red Bull was, okay, you'll finish this year in F3, GP3, then 2 years of F2. and then we'll see from there what we do. With Red Bull, I can't remember, but it was straight away, you'll do Formula 3. That was a decision.
Now, you've raced in both Formula 3 and GP3. Which was a better race car?
Formula 3.
Why is that?
It was lighter, a very direct, feelable car, and you learn all the... I would say all the right... If you're fast in that car, you're fast in anything. You learn all the right techniques to drive, and I felt that there was a much bigger difference between the great drivers and the good drivers. Whereas when I got in the GP3... It was super tight. It was very hard to take big steps in the corners. Whereas in the previous car, like if you knew the car well, you were able to take so much time out of other people. And then it was heavier. There was a bit more tire degradation, and it's just not an easy car to learn in. And then the track time as well. We got so much more track time in the older one.
Have you ever employed a driver coach?
Employed a driver coach.
Somebody teaching you how to drive race cars?
Yeah, so I occasionally still do stuff with Rob Wilson, who does quite a few of the F1 drivers, and but that's away from the track. I had Oliver Oakes when I was karting, who now owns High Tech GP. 2015, I had a guy called Albert Costa with Carlin. 2016, Harry Tinknell.
Oh, I'm friends with him.
Yeah.
You know Tinks?
Yeah. No, I haven't spoken to him in a while, but yeah, he was mine and Harry Newey's driver coach in 2016. 2017, with Prema, we had Nuno Rodriguez.
Sosa? Nuno
Sosa? Yes, one, sorry, Nuno
Sosa. Guy from Portugal.
Yes.
I know him too.
Yes. He's a good one. Then 18, no, I don't think. 19, no. 20, no. And then, you know, when you do some GT stuff, your teammates are your kind of driver coaches because you're all trying to reach common goal. And then when I came out here for the ovals, I had Ryan Hunter-Reay.
Yeah, he's very good. He won the Indy 500. So getting a driver coach does help a quick driver.
Yeah, I have two opinions of it. One is, like, again, for the ovals, it was very necessary. For when I was younger, it was very necessary. And it also is someone to help you bridge the communication between the engineer and you, because you don't quite know how to communicate well, and then you learn to communicate well. But then on the other side, I was like, look, in a certain way, if I can't look at the data and learn myself and know where to go quicker, I'm not a good enough driver. I need to be able to read it myself. And of course, it's always good to have another opinion, but if you and your team with your engineer and your performance engineers can't reach a common goal and find 100%, I don't think you're in the right environment. And I think you need to improve yourself, and then you need to get a driver coach.
I'm sure you know the biggest fan of Rob Wilson is Peter Windsor.
Yes, yeah. I mean, Rob, I think I try and see him at least once or twice a year to get me started and get me back in the flow. I know a lot of drivers who see him a lot more. But yeah, he's a good guy and teaches us a lot of car fundamentals.
Okay, in 2017, you won the qualifying race in Macau, a race I love very much. How would you compare it with Monte Carlo and Long Beach street circuits?
Tougher. 1.5 to 2 times tougher. Monaco is very smooth and no overtaking, so all you have to do is qualify well and you kind of hold your position and get as long as you get off the line. But Macau is like that mix of almost an oval tactically with the slipstream, or at least with the old car with the slipstreams, and then you just go into this humongous mountain section which is full of, you need confidence, you need stability, you need to not over push it as well, and that's where you really see the drivers who master it and not. I love it as a track. It's one of those ones where I come in from a session and my eyes are just wide because of the concentration you'd have to have.
Yeah, every driver I've spoken to who has raced there speaks very well. And I like it because it has my favorite corner, Maternity Ward.
Yeah, it's... I mean, to be fair, it's... there's quite a few. I loved the technicality of that track, the differences, the bumpiness of it. And also, like, the first time I went there, I had a disaster. You know, I really did not have a good weekend at all. And that just was, like, the learning point for me to become a better driver, especially on street circuits. And it's rewarded me ever since.
Your thoughts on two great American tracks, Laguna Seca and Road America?
Love them both. Easy as that.
You like the corkscrew?
I love the corkscrew. Road America, I really like, I can't remember the name of it, but the really long sweeping right.
Canada Corner, I believe?
No, before Canada Corner. I think there's the kink and then before that.
Okay. The track is great. It reminds me of like the old Österreichring.
I think, yeah, I mean, a lot of the tracks here and the whole establishment reminds a lot of people like the 80s, 90s Formula One style.
Have you raced at Circuit of the Americas, Austin?
No. I've been there, but never raced it.
You like it, the layout?
Yeah, I like it. I think it's very challenging as a driver. I know some who are not a big fan of it, but it's so one after another that you're always having to anticipate, and if you're out by a centimeter here, you'll be out by a foot four corners later, and a lot of combined corners, which makes it tough.
You know what I like? It reminds me a lot of the first corner going in different direction, like the Brands Hatch.
Yes, Brands Hatch. Of course, you've got the drop down there, but yeah, it's. I never raced Brands, actually.
Oh, really?
Never driven Brands. I've been there a lot, but I've never driven it.
Have you raced at Oulton Park?
No.
Silverstone?
Silverstone, yes.
Okay, that's good. Okay.
That's the only English one I've raced at.
Not even Snetterton?
No, because I went straight into European Formula 3, so yeah. I never got a chance.
Wow, interesting. Okay, you have 3 wins in Formula 2, which I believe is more than Mick Schumacher. Why is this series normally so hard for rookies to win in their first year? Is it lack of testing or understanding of the tyres?
In Formula 2? I think a bit understanding the tyre. Sometimes it's there was a difference in teams, you know. You knew the teams that were going to be stronger. But yeah, that understanding of the car, understanding the limits. Also, you actually go from practice on a compound or two harder, and you don't get a chance to run the softer compound until qualifying. So you go onto a completely different car, completely different tyre, and that's hard for rookies to get on top of.
Okay. You have driven Formula One machinery. What's the main difference from an Indy car?
No power steering.
And they're hurting Jamie Chadwick quite a bit in Indy Next.
Yeah, it's that's in Indy Next. Wait till you go into IndyCar. It's another level. I mean, you can see my hands already.
Wow, blisters.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
That's from qualifying.
Yeah, qualifying practice. Yeah, not easy, but it's the way it is, and that's the first thing. Because the tyres are also so different, you can end up sliding and just pushing on these tyres all the time and they can take it. Whereas in Formula 1, that's not the case. You have to do push, cool. And then Formula 1, because there's so much development, the car is a mechanically perfect car. This feels almost more like a rally car for the road. You know, you're always fighting it, which is why the drivers love it so much, because it's such a different style.
Your karting career was very impressive. Apart from winning the European Championship, what were other high moments you are most proud of?
2012, I had a great year. I won pretty much almost all the WSK events I went in at the time, which was like the unofficial championship. So you had the CIK ones and then you had the WSK. So all the same people were running those, and I had a really good year. I finished second in the World Cup that year as well, starting P17. 2014, when I won the European Championships, the World Cup was in France, and I started, I think, 32nd, and I finished 4th. That was a great race for me to come through. Of course, it was not the win, but to be able to gain so many positions like that and have such a great race was really cool. I would say, yeah, between 2012 and 2014, those are my 2 good years.
Okay, winning is never easy, no matter where you are. Having raced in Europe for several years and now for a few years, do you see the difference in depth of competition between drivers here and overseas?
Yeah, the difference here is we are running in a fully professional series, whereas Formula 3, Formula 2, you've got junior drivers, so everyone's learning still. And here, you're not meant to be learning, you know, you're meant to be at the top of your game. Of course, as a rookie, you still learn, but it's so competitive, so tight, so competitive. You've got 3 different disciplines of road course, street circuit, and ovals, and that's really tough to be on top of as a driver and as a team. And in Europe, you have very flat, very similar circuits, so if you have a good baseline setup, it probably works everywhere. Here, you've just got to keep changing, you've got to be on top of it, and that's not easy to do. So as a driver, as a team, the experience counts, and all these guys are super competitive.
Now, of all the drivers you have raced against all over the world, karting, different formulae, America, Europe, whatever, if you were a team owner and you had to pick, let's say, 2 or 3 drivers for your team, who would you select based on performance?
Lando and Verstappen.
Can't argue with that. Would there be room for a third seat for Dan Ticktum?
I like Dan. I mean, we grew up karting together. I've known him since I was 9 or 10. Oh, I don't know. I mean, he's very naturally talented. I mean, I'd consider it. I don't know. But you've only got two seats at the moment in Formula One. Maybe an IndyCar you can fit him in.
How was he when he was in karting? I know he's very quick because I followed his career for a long time, and also Lando. Was he always hot-headed even in karting? You know what he did with Ricky Collard.
Yeah, look, I mean, some people, obviously what happened is not on and not really ideal at all. But I'm not, that's in the past and not something I was around. What I do know is him as a person, and he's not changed, if you know what I mean. Like, that was Dan that I remember when he was 9 or 10, and, you know, it's difficult because I like him a lot, and I see past that side of things that other people view him for, because I just go like, okay, you know, that's normal. Like, I don't think of him as maybe some people think, which could be arrogant or hot-headed or whatever. Yeah, I do agree that he probably says more of what he thinks than he should, but I always love to hear his opinion because it's entertaining.
Yes. Now, why do you rate, I want to get your take on this, Lando so high, and I totally agree with you. What's your reasoning?
We, again, same, similar journey. I followed him through similar steps through his career, and, you know, Lando was very naturally talented, but also he was prepared to levels that other drivers who weren't as naturally talented got. And he just, in a certain way, became a machine. Like, very, very impressive altogether, and there's not much room for improvement. And, you know, when you look at someone like that and you go, like, I don't see how I could have, if I was in charge of you, how I could have prepared you any better. And he's done an amazing job all the way through.
Greatly appreciate your time. I finally have a request. How about a message for our listeners? We have quite a few in UK, even in Cambridge, where you come from.
Yeah, I mean, again, thank you for listening or reading this. Look, I'd love for more people in the UK to follow my journey in IndyCar. I imagine I will be here for a long time. If you watch Formula 2 and you watch my seasons in that, you would know me. But yeah, I just want to show what kind of driver I am, what kind of person I am, and I hope people enjoy that journey with me.
Okay, I have two more questions, if you don't mind. One is standard, we ask all drivers who come from overseas. When you were here, what's your choice, cheeseburgers or hot dogs?
Cheeseburgers.
That's good. Okay, the next question is, skipping my mind, yes, which is we are asking this year everybody. Will Lewis Hamilton get championship number 8 before Fernando Alonso gets number 3?
I would have said yes last year. This year, I think that Aston Martin is very impressive and he's doing a very, very good job. The problem is that I feel Red Bull is a step ahead. I would still probably say Lewis, because I think Mercedes as a environment right now has more to improve on and more to find, and they will find it because they won't stop until they do. Aston, you know, they've done an amazing job so far, but I don't know how much further that ceiling is.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we'll catch up with you at other races.
Yeah, let me know.
Okay, thanks.
Callum, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Thank you, Nasser. Keep up the good work. So we'll be back after these brief messages.
Hi, I'm Carlos Sainz, and you are listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. In now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Arigato, Clarkson. We shall start with Tokyo. Aston Martin bonding with Honda. Good news and big news from last week. Honda staying in Formula 1, but moving from Red Bull to Raging Bull in 2026. And I need some inside info from you on this. At a press conference in Tokyo attended by Lawrence Stroll, Martin Whitmarsh, and head honchos from Honda, it was announced Honda will power Aston Martin beginning 2026. Honda is fully aware one seat is set for Daddy's little Jim Clark, what everybody else wants to know, who will be in the second seat. Right now they are saying they don't have a problem with Alonso being in the team. I am not sure if he will still be there in 2026, but I would like to know why he was not at the press conference. Perhaps the chihuahua at his casa did not bite the postman but ate the invitation. Do you have any inside info on this, sir?
Yes, he was not invited, but he said it was cool, he understands, and he digs it. But he said he'll be happy to drive the Honda-powered Aston Martin. And to me, for me, I think the whole thing is so bizarre. I mean, even Verstappen said that Honda leaving Red Bull is a shame. Now, I don't know what kind of communication devices they use at Red Bull. To me, it seems like there is a failure to communicate. I mean, how could you let Honda go or keep them by your side while you're building your own engine and then switch to Ford? I mean, I like Ford. I mean, they're reliable and it's a good American product. You have a winning engine and you're dumping it for Ford, I guess, who's going to help you build your own motors because you have spent billions on this. And Honda's going to go to a team that's now rising to the top, and they're going to further rise. I'm really confused with this whole recipe. I don't understand how Christian Horn, maybe because they were so paranoid from the Renault years that they thought maybe we'll jump ahead before the decline of Honda. So I'm not quite sure. Nasser, maybe you know more than I do.
My understanding is, if you recall, some years ago, Honda decided to pull out of Formula One and made an official announcement, right? And that's when Red Bull started their Red Bull Powertrains, which is also based in Milton Keynes, right next to their factory and operations. And then Honda decided to give them technical support without being involved. Remember, one year they did not even have the Honda name on their car, okay? And there was a CEO who pulled Honda out because they want to put resources into, you know, electric cars, which is really the future of the automotive industry. And then now he has retired or moved, and they have brought in a new person. And new person is like us, the little people. He has passion for Formula One. So they have decided to come back now officially. So that's what my understanding is, caused Red Bull to, but they thought Honda was gone, and but they have done a U-turn. So that's where we are. But it will shake up the field. And, you know, so I am convinced that by the time they leave, Max will have 5 championships and God knows 60, 70, 80 Grand Prix wins. And I hope he has a great package with Ford. But, you know, anytime you change power plant, it takes time to get going, and all dynasties and reigns do come to an end. So he cannot go 5-6 championships in a row. He has what it takes, but he needs the package. Now, the good thing about him, if he needs to have any reference, up until 2 years ago, it was only Alonso you could reach out to. Now he can text Lewis Hamilton also. Both will tell the man, if you don't have the right package, you're not going to win. And I'm not kidding. So that's where the issue is, sir. But times are interesting. Audi is coming. And so I'm very happy about disappointed Porsche name will not be there. But you know this guy, what was his name? XF or MX Dimesson? FX Dimesson, who was let go from Williams along with their Jos Capito. He has now joined Hyundai. And Cyril Abitbol is there also on their on their rallying program. So I will not be surprised by 2026 Hyundai also comes into Formula One with Cyril Abitbol as the head honcho. So they won't be adding Formula One people without having any interest in Formula One. That's just what I think. And you know, now it's been for many years, Hyundai and the Kia group, they sell a lot more cars than Ford Motor Company, which I could not believe when I first read that. But welcome to the new world order. Okay, sir, moving on. Alfa Male to get Alfa Romeo sponsorship. This is a nice catch. According to a report on Racing News 365, Alfa Romeo are set to join Haas in a Formula One title deal from the 2024 season, potentially worth about $20 million. At the end of 2023, the Alfa title sponsorship of the Sauber team will end as the Swiss-based team prepare for new German owners Audi in 2026, and previously there. You know, that team is based in German part of Switzerland, so I'm sure the Germans will feel very much at home. And previously it used to be known as BMW Sauber. Moving on to more action from Monte Carlo, Formula 2 sprint race on Saturday. Winner was Red Bull Jr. and Honda's next rising son, Ayumu Iwasa. Man from Mumbai, Jahan Daruwala, was second. Jack Crawford from Dallas, Texas, was third man on the podium. He is also in the Red Bull program. In the sprint race, what they do is they take the qualifiers from the main feature race and reverse the grid, I think the first 10 or first 12, not the whole grid. The feature race on Sunday was won by a Mercedes man from Denmark, Frederik Vesti. In the championship, Vesti has 89 points. Second is Theo Pourchaire from France with 84. Iwasa is third with 69. And Indian racer Maini, 49. And Theo Pourchaire, he's part of the Sauber program. And this is his third year in the championship. If he does not win the championship, and he's young and he's very quick, but if he does not deliver, then I think they're going to call U-Haul and ship him, ask him to do the driving yourself. We don't have Greyhound here. Okay, Formula 3 sprint race on Saturday won by Spanish driver Jose Maria Marti. Sebastian Montoya from Miami and Bambino of Juan Pablo was 7th. Feature race winner was Don Corleone's protege from Sicily, Gabriel Mini, who is managed by Nicola Tort. Second was Dino Beganovic from Sweden, who is a Ferrari junior and a mega talent. Okay, championship. At the top, we have case of Gabriel versus Gabriel. Brazilian Gabriel Bortoleto leading with 73 points. Italian Gabriel Mini is second on 56. Now we come to the greatest spectacle in Formula One. Indy 500. Joseph Newgarden delivered 19th Indy 500 victory to Roger Penske, who now not only owns the team, but also the series and Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I guess Roger is on the Victor Kayyem program. So do you remember Victor Kayyem?
Yeah, one of my buddies.
Yes. Okay, Marcus Ericsson almost made it back-to-back Swedish Rhapsody, but caution and red flag got in the way. And Marcus is very upset, as you can imagine, and he said it was not fair, it was dangerous and all that. But, you know, I think racing fans deserve a race finish at high speed. And this, I think what happened there has become the trend in motor racing. You okay with that, sir?
Yes, and well, the biggest problem is there was a little delay when the decision was made, because even AJ Foyt thought this was ending on a caution and there was only 3 laps to go, and you could tell he was ready, he was getting up, he knew it was over, and they've ended Indy 500s on cautions in the past. But all of a sudden, somebody threw the flag, it was red, Marcus Ericsson said, "Oh no." And that was all she wrote.
Yeah, you know, did you see how much, before the last restart, did you see how much time they spent on focusing the camera on his wife?
That was another thing. I'm not sure what's going on there, but I'm not against it. But yeah, they had an issue with Ericsson's wife. And you know, she's a nice lady and she was a little emotional. And it was all like very, very interesting. And there's some conspiracies going around. You know, Penske team won when Foyt could have won. I don't know, Nasser.
Yeah, it reminded me of ABC. You know, it's amazing that Indy 500, the first time it was televised live in the U.S. was 1986. And up until 85, or even when ABC had it, I'll never forget this one guy once wrote, he watched the 500, and he said ABC actually showed 46 minutes of racing, because they would do stuff like, let's visit Sandy Andretti's new Italian kitchen and the bathroom and the new bedroom, and they would spend 5-10 minutes, you know, on this thing. Let's visit Katie Guerrero's backyard. That was just, and you're watching one of the most important races on earth, and they're showing somebody's kitchen. Can you believe that?
Well, not only do I believe it, but they still have plenty of work to do. We are lucky people. You watch the Monaco Grand Prix. There are no ads. There are no pauses. There's no stopping. And then all of a sudden you switch to Indy 500, and there are ads. And there are ads. And there are ads. And there are ads. And it's really annoying. I don't care what anybody says. That little tiny screen that they shift to while the ad is playing is annoying. Penske, I know you've got deep pockets. Get a title sponsor. Dump the ads. If the British can do it, the captain can do it.
And speaking of Formula One Monaco, you know, it was the first time the television feed was arranged by Formula One, otherwise the local. It was the only race that the local broadcaster would do. And I remember previously when you watched the GP2 or F2 race, they would show different angles, maybe not as much aerial shot, but some pan shots of the area where you get the feel of this place. But this time they had a helicam, and man, these overhead shots through the streets of Monte Carlo when the race was going on, I absolutely loved it.
I loved it. No commercials. It was glorious, glorious, glorious.
Okay, moving on. Santino Ferrucci. You know, we interviewed this kid when he was racing in Europe some years ago. He was third for AJ Foyt Racing. His teammate from Seattle, Mr. Benjamin Peterson, we mentioned earlier, was Rookie of the Year. Now we go across the pond. Italian F4 from Spa. All these races are available on YouTube. American kid from New York, Ugo Ugochukwu, was the winner in race 3 of the weekend and is now second in the championship, 124 points. He is a ex-karting world champion and is in the good hands of Mr. Zak Brown. The championship leader is Red Bull Jr. from London Town, Arvid Lindblad, on 154 points. Next, we go through our Jacobi and Myers journal. All rise. In motor racing, be it Formula One or the other side of the pond or any car racing on this side, what would be a multi-million dollar project without a good lawsuit? The construction company that was given the contract design and build, Michael Andretti's global racing headquarters in Fisher, Indiana, has filed a lawsuit against the company that was managing the project for Michael. Anybody interested, and I did this, but anybody interested in reading the full complaint can do a little Google on this information, and it's available because it's a public record. My favorite part of the complaint is the attorney demanding a trial by jury and signing under the words, respectfully. Oh boy. Now the case number, if somebody wants to Google this thing, is 29C01-2305. PL-004661 in Hamilton County, Indiana. Let's see who will enjoy at the end of the trial, last dance with Mary Jane. And any comments on this, sir?
Well, what's the trial about? Who's messing with what? What's missing? Who confiscated funds? What's going on?
No, it's usual. You know, this is a mega project, so this company was supposed to do feasibility study, which they did, and then they said, okay, we will hire you to do the project, and then the company says, okay, but for electrical, you know, there are different things involved, water and this and that, we would need to bring in partners, and step by step, they started bringing in partners. Some were recommended by Michael's company, and then they get an email, your services are no longer required. So it's just a typical situation, you know. So let's see how it goes on. Okay, sir, but there's more fun here. Some people have time on hand. Listen to this. Anti-dairy lobby wants Indy 500 winners to stop dousing themselves in milk. I mean, how amazing how far people will go. This tradition stems from three-time winner Louis Mayer asking for a bottle of buttermilk after his second victory in 1933. So this is almost like a 90-year tradition. Mayer said that while growing up, his mother told him to drink buttermilk to cool down on hot days. The practice became a tradition during the 1950s with sponsorship from the dairy industry. However, winners can no longer drink buttermilk in victory lane. Drivers can choose a preference between skim 2% and whole milk. But the Indiana Dairy Association refuses to let drivers select buttermilk. According to this report, modern buttermilk is genuinely disgusting and only intended to be used as a cooking ingredient. I mean, nothing is safe these days. Have you noticed that?
What about the buttermilk fans of America? I've never heard of this. Buttermilk tastes exactly like yogurt. It is yogurt. This is pure poppycock.
Yes. Okay, sir, now we come to forward-looking statement. You know, in companies' annual reports, there is a forward-looking statement. Since F1 Weekly is listed only on Kampala Stock Exchange, we don't do this on a regular basis. But with Honda doing a deal with Aston Martin, I thought this is required. Back in early 1980s, Honda returned to Formula One with a team called Spirit and Stefan Johansson as the driver. The project went nowhere and they took their engines to Williams, where it became a Tokyo Rose and gave Nelson Piquet his third world championship. Then the Pakaj moved to McLaren and three championships for Senna and Prost. Not bad for a motorcycle manufacturer. History repeated itself when they reunited with McLaren, who had Machismo and one of the most talented young drivers of the time, Stoffel van Dorn, and actually Fernando recently, you know, made a reference to this. To call the power plant they brought to McLaren second time around a lame duck or a sick joke would be a serious understatement. Formula One did not want Honda to leave the sport, so a deal was made to supply engines to Toro Rosso, so mothership Red Bull can evaluate the engines, and they are reaping the benefits these days. Today, the lethal combination of Max, Adrian Newey, and GP2 engines is unbeatable. I was thinking what would happen if Honda Power and all the resources Lawrence Stroll has is putting into this kid's future result in become and the car become as competitive as today's Red Bull or yesterday's Mercedes. And you know, that may happen. They're building a new factory also. The real scary part is Lance Stroll may hear from the team in Abu Dhabi in the Arabian Night one day or one night. Lance Stroll, you are the new world champion. And what a magic carpet ride that will be. All Lawrence has to do to make this happen is to put Yuji Ide or Alex Yung as his teammate when the car becomes that competitive. Because if he puts Oscar Piastri in the number two seat, then Lance's Canadian goose and gander will be cooked. Well done. What say you, amigo, on shape of things to come in 2026 and at Aston Martin? And will Machismo be still there?
I actually think they're going to want Machismo, because that level of machismo-ness is hard to find in unique individuals. And I'm afraid Lance, as wonderful as he is, just doesn't have that peak, that machismo-ness. So I think they need Fernando, they're going to want Fernando, and Fernando could stick around as a leader of men.
Yeah, I have a feeling mostly is because of the age, and by that time, Lando, Piastri, and other young whippersnappers who are coming, Yuki Tsunoda, might be lethal weapon by then. So I think more because of the age, I think we will see Nando depart from Aston Martin before Honda arrives. But we'll see. Okay, sir, anything you need to say before we move to our final segment, Musical Mondial?
No, nothing exciting, but we do have Hispania. I'm telling you, folks, the win is coming, and this is a good place. It could be 2016 where we see a team screw up, and there's bitterness, and Checo will be bitter. He's got a lot of points to make up. So Checo has really got to win a race or two to be back in contention. And that's going to make him frustrated. And he might look over to that Dutch guy and say, you know what? I really don't like Gouda. So we'll see what happens. But this is Fernando's affair. We know Fernando's going to be on the front of the spear with the Red Bull. So I'm telling you, Barcelona with the wind, so exciting.
Do you have any report on what the weather will be?
The weather is going to be beautiful. It's España. They're in a drought. If it rains, they need it. So let's hope it comes.
Okay, sir. Now we come to our second interview of the day. This is with a gentleman who is a legend in Argentine motor racing because he has won a lot of stock car series there. And stock car there is road racing. And he's from Argentina, and so is Ricardo Junco. So they brought him here in his first season of IndyCar. Not only IndyCar, but for basically first season of open wheel racing. And he has adapted very well, both to oval racing and road racing. The events at Indy did not go his way this past weekend, but he's doing very well and with a team that's known for punching above its weight. And his name is Agostino Canapino. My thanks to him, and hopefully our listeners will enjoy this conversation.
Okay, folks, I'm here at Indianapolis Motor Speedway with Senor Agustin Canapino, all the way from Argentina. Agustin, thank you for your time. How are you, and how is the weekend going so far?
Not as the best as we expected. We need to improve our car for some moment, but on the personal job I'm really happy because I am much closer than Callum than before. We will start tomorrow 24 and 25. It is what it is. It's a really difficult category, so I will do my best tomorrow trying to get some points.
Okay. I met your compadre Pachito a few months ago at Sebring, and I would like to ask you the same question I asked him. Are you happy Messi got the world championship?
Yes, of course. That was really, really spectacular for us. We are really, really happy. We can't believe it because it's a huge, huge achievement, and we are really proud for Lionel and for everybody in the Argentinian team.
Absolutely, and if I may ask, have you ever met him?
Messi? No.
It's too hard to get to, huh?
Hey, he's like a god. It's really difficult, but he looks really good man.
Okay, this is your first full year of racing in Indy cars. What is the goal you and the team have set?
My goal is try to learn during this year. We took really good results at the beginning of the season, both P12, and we started really well. But the goal is try to get an opportunity to do another year, because with only 1 year, I can't show how I can do. So I need another opportunity with more practice, with more practice, and knowing that the track is really important. So my goal is try to get a second year, but to do that, I need to show a good improvement, a good character, and a good races, finishing the races, and try to do my best every weekend.
Okay. Now, racing is very cutthroat business. Are you getting some help from your teammate, Callum?
Yes, all the time. Callum is really kind with me. I am really grateful with Callum because he's an amazing driver, one of the best drivers in the series. Take the data and the videos from Callum is really important for my improvement and for my learning. So for me, it's an honor to share the thing with a driver like Callum.
Okay. How was your first IndyCar oval race experience in Texas? And how big is the challenge for you to adjust to high-speed oval tracks here in the U.S.?
Really good. Much better than I expected. I finished at P12. I battling with our big experience at drivers. Overtook Castro Neves, Pochino, Power, battling with Ericsson, the last 500 winner. The car was really good there, and I could do a good race. Finished at the end P12. We could do better, but finishing P12 in my first oval race was incredible.
Now you know what they say about oval racing. There are two types of drivers, those who have hit the wall and those who will hit the wall. Someday it will happen to you. It happens to everybody. Is that something that you're concerned about because the cars are so fast?
Yes, of course. It's really, really risky, honestly. It's really difficult. But at the end of the day, I like it because I think it's really fun and really, really different than the other type of motorsport on the world. So I think it's, of course, it's really risky, but it's IndyCar. It's the philosophy of the category. Put the men's on the top of the race, on the top of the level, and I think everybody enjoyed that.
Okay. Long Beach Grand Prix is one of the most famous IndyCar races, and I'm sure you know your compadre Lole won there in 1978 for Ferrari. Yeah. Do you enjoy racing in the street courses as much as purpose-built tracks like Road America?
Yes, I enjoy it because it's a challenge for the driver, because in the street courses you can't do any mistake because the wall is really close to you. So Long Beach, I at least could do some laps leading the race, and after that I have some problems and I had to DNF, but I enjoy the Long Beach, the Saint Pete. Of course I will enjoy the other street courses.
With Ricardo Juncos, you also raced in the Daytona 24 Hours in 2019. What was your first impression of racing on an oval, and I love the Daytona track, and also American racing atmosphere?
Daytona, I was on the road course of Daytona. It's really different than the oval. My first experience in the oval was Texas. So, but Daytona and this race, my first time outside my country, everything started there because Ricardo saw me in this race, and after this race, he wants to give me the opportunity to be here. So it was really, really important for me.
Now, Argentina has produced some great names, you know, Maestro, Fangio, Jose Fraulein Gonzalez, who gave Ferrari his first Grand Prix victory, and Carlos Reutemann. What will it take for Argentina to produce another world champion?
Oh, it's really difficult. It's really, really tough, because we need a young man trying to get the Formula One seat, like a really, really young. And the other things we haven't, and we need is the money. Unfortunately, every motorsport in the world have the same problem, but the Formula One is the most. The money is the most important part, and of course you need to have the talent too. So everybody wish, everybody hopes that happens someday, but now it's really difficult to do.
Okay. Last year you did an IndyCar demo run in Buenos Aires, and I've been to that track and Rio Honda circuit. How did that go, and how big is the interest and possibility to see an IndyCar race in your country next year?
I don't know. This is a question for Ricardo, but I wish that. I think an IndyCar race there will be really, really amazing, will be really, really fantastic, because the fans in my country are a lot, are really, really fanatics. So everybody wish that.
Okay. Your car will have special Argentine colors for the Indy 500 coming soon. If you become the first driver from Argentina to win that race, what will that mean to you? And more importantly, will your people love you as much as they love Senor Messi?
No, I don't think in that, because only participate for the 500 is like a win for me, because be part of this race, the most important race of the world, after 100 years, I know when is the last Argentinian racing here, is amazing. So if I can participate, if I can qualify, it's like a win for me, and for me it's enough. I don't need much Messi, because it's impossible. So I am really grateful for the opportunity, and I will do my best. This is my only thing.
Okay, before you came here, how popular was IndyCar racing in Argentina?
It's popular in the motorsport fans, but not too much, because we have an Argentinians racing here. Now, in this moment, it's much more popular, and it's growing up a lot, the fans of IndyCar. So before, not too much, but now it's a lot.
Okay. You are from Arrecifes, which is also the hometown of Jose Fraulein Gonzalez. I'm guessing you knew him, and did you also knew Carlos Reutemann?
No, I never met Reutemann, unfortunately. I met Fraulein Gonzalez, of course. He was an amazing man, and I love him, because he drove in a really, really risky era, really, really years. So I think he's more like a hero than the driver, because this era, these years, were really, really risks to drive a racing car.
Now, Lole came from Santa Fe, and I know there used to be a street car race in Santa Fe. If you raced there, he never showed up there?
No, I don't know. I think Lole was really busy, I don't know, but I never met him.
Yeah, political guy later. You know, I was in Argentina in 2011, and I met both of them. Actually, I did an interview with Jose Fraulein Gonzalez at his Alfa Romeo dealership on Avenida Uruguay.
Yeah.
So that was fun. I had a great time being in Argentina. And, you know, if they race in Argentina, I will try my best to get there. I do have a question for you. You have a very nice track, Potrero de los Funes, or something like this.
Yes.
Have you raced there? What do you think of that track?
Oh, amazing. It's a unique track in the world.
Oh, yeah.
But unfortunately, it's really expensive to do a race there. And unfortunately, the last year, we didn't any race. But in the past, we did a lot of races there. And every driver enjoyed it a lot, every lap in Potrero de los Funes, because it's a unique track. It's a track in the mountain. and really long with a lot of type of corners. Incredible track.
When it first opened and they did a sports car race there, I think it was a World Touring Car race, I just could not believe how beautiful that place is. Okay, I am very familiar with the Argentine Touring Car Championship races. I watch on YouTube quite a bit. You've won a lot of races and championships in your country. Can you tell us what were most important wins and memorable moments for you?
I won 15 championships there, but the most important, maybe the first of every category I won. My first championship, Turismo Carretera, the most popular category in South America. My first championship in TC 2000, and my first championship in Top Race. Because every time, the first time, were the best feeling.
Now, you said, you know, motor racing is very expensive. When it comes to local Argentine series, TC and other series there, which are very popular, is it easy for top-line drivers to get a sponsorship there?
It's not... In the past, much easier. Now the problem we have is the economical situation with the country. Now the country is in a very, very bad situation about the money, about the financial situation. So now it's really, really tough. But I think it's more for the country than the motorsport situation.
One last question. You know, Fangio's nephew, Juan Manuel Fangio II, he raced here in America for Dan Gurney for many years, and I knew him fairly well in those days. Do you know him?
I know him, but I never met him personally. But of course, I know him. He's the son of Fangio, and he racing in IndyCar for I don't know how many years, but he's a really good driver for the past, and of course, the son of the greatest Fangio.
Okay, finally, I thank you for your time again. How about a message for our listeners? We have listeners all over the world. If you want to say anything to them, and you can tell them about your website so they can follow your career.
Again, I'm really grateful for Ricardo Juncos, the world team, to give me this opportunity. I never expect that. It's my first time I have the chance to do something outside my country. I never have the money to do, so this is my first time. I am a little bit old, but at the end of the day, I am enjoying a lot this situation, and I will do my best to have a best result possible during the time and during the years here in IndyCar.
Okay, we wish you all the best, and gracias muchachas. Thank you
very much. Yeah.
Agostino, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com.
Okay, sir. So now we move on to Musical Mondial to close the podcast. And sad news from last week, Miss Tina Turner from Nutbush City, Surrey, Tennessee, passed away last week at her palatial home by Lake Zurich in Switzerland. Big loss to the world of music, a very electrifying performer. Today we play my favorite song by her, Private Dancer, a song written by Mark Knopfler of Dire Straits. As wonderful to listen to at home or on Telegraph Road. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy. Rest in peace, Miss Tina.
I'm your private dancer, a dancer for money. I'll do what you want me to do. I'm your private dancer, a dancer for money.